Welcome to the Sign and Rickon Podcast, the wrestling show that sometimes breaks kayfabe and discusses comics, movies, video games, anime, and all things relevant to pop culture. And now it's going to take over with NXT Unstoppable. I'm one of your hosts, Cyan Aflame.
And I'm Strahd Rickon.
Thanks for joining us today. Man, NXT, do they ever have a failure?
Do they? I don't think I've ever, as far as the specials go, I'm pretty sure we're, what, 6 for 6? Is that how many we've had? 6 or 5?
They're on their 5th special, and
so we're 5 for 5 then.
Every single one of them has just been off the chain, absolutely fantastic. I just can't get over it. I mean, you sit there and over again say the same things of like, oh, this NXT show, it's pretty darn good, and it just feels like it's taken for granted almost at this point, but I'm never stopped being impressed by it. And this show allowed new matchups. The last couple have just been kind of variations on a theme. The matchups and match presentation in this one has been very unique, and a lot of the characters evolved a lot in this one. You actually see that it shows that they've had over a year of, like, major televised experience. I know they had, you know, NXT shows, you know, going before the network launched, but the spotlight was on them so much more once they had that first takeover, which I believe was in May of 2014.
So, yeah, they've had about a year of live events. So, I mean, they've gotten used to it. Like, they've really found, like, their niche, I guess. And you can tell, like, they're, as the title says, they're unstoppable at this point.
Yeah, absolutely unstoppable. In the first match, one person did prove to be stoppable. Hideo Itami was attacked before the match began. They found him in the parking lot with a shoulder injury. He'd been attacked. They did not reveal who it was that injured him. It was actually kind of a fun angle, the way that it started off, because it opened up with like a in-the-street promo of Enzo Amore and Big Cass shooting on Blake and Murphy, which you knew it was going to be an angle for something else was going to happen in the parking lot because of the fact that you never actually see these, like, on-the-spot interviews. Like, they always have the backstage interview or whatever like that. With seeing the on-the-spot interview in the parking lot of Enzo and Cass getting ready, I was actually kind of marking out. I was like, this is really cool. This feels like an actual reporter just ran up to them and TMZ'd them. Like, I like that feel. Like,
yeah,
actually, more of that. And
yeah, I like how it felt. It didn't feel, you know, because backstage segments, you know, it's a controlled environment, so they have the wrestler, you know, and something happens, they just kind of run to another room. But this was in, like, the parking lot. This was out in the open. So it felt more, like you said, like a TMZ type thing where they were trying to interview the wrestlers, but something else happened, so it felt more organic.
Yeah, and so, anyways, they hear a yell, they come over and they see Hideo Itami laying there in pain with his shoulder, and a couple other wrestlers are, like, kind of walking by. Some of them run up and they are concerned for him, trying to help him up, and you see NXT heavyweight champion, Kevin Owens walk by, and he's just like, eh. Like, you see him get out of his car, so you know it wasn't him who did it, but just, like, his look of just absolutely not giving a damn that this guy just got injured really spoke to his character well as well. But it was a bit of a bummer to not have Hideo Itami in the triple threat, because I think that they could have had an excellent triple threat match with those three individuals, but I think it's setting up for a heel turn for Finn Balor, myself. Because Finn's been the hero while playing the demon, and I just don't know if the demon can stay as a face the entire run.
Unless he can play off that the demon is the heel, and Finn Balor himself is a face. I mean, has that been done in wrestling? Has a character...
So he's got a split personality?
Right.
It's been done, but
hasn't been done effectively.
Not
though.
Exactly. There you go.
Because I would buy into that. Because Finn Balor, normal Finn Balor, even in his promos and, you know, meeting him, like, as a person, he seems to be, you know, regular Joe Schmo, with the exception of him being, like, a wrestler that's been all over the world. Whereas Demon Balor, obviously, you know, you could do all kinds of things with that character. So, maybe that's what they're going for. Because, obviously, they left Hideo out of this for a reason. One, probably to save face. They probably didn't want, because they wanted Balor to win, but they probably didn't want Hideo taking the pin. Or maybe they just didn't want to hurt his momentum. So they went with this angle, you know, and then later, half Hideo be like, hey, I was never beaten for the contendership, so I deserve a spot. You know, so to speak.
That, and, I mean, you can definitely build up. I mean, next Wednesday they may have Hideo back, and he says, you know, I was attacked by a man I thought was my friend, Finn Balor, and, you know, he injured my arm. He knew that he was going to come for me, but I am going to take him out, type thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you'll have that, you know, Finn Balor defends his number one contendership, because we've already seen Finn Balor as the number one contender to Kevin Owens, and he lost the match, but he didn't come in as the Demon. So we do need to have an opportunity of Finn Balor, you know, as the Demon with his full ability, especially since, you know, as Prince Albert put it, the Demon Balor, we don't know what moves he has.
We don't know what he's capable of.
Exactly. It's not just a dude in awesome paint. Like, that is legitimately a demon you see in the ring. It's,
yeah.
It's hard to believe. Which, I was actually surprised. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've never felt that the Demon Balor has ever been dominated in any of the matches. Tyler Breeze dominated a portion of this match.
Yeah, there's a bit of face in peril mechanics, you know, at work here. Like you said, Tyler Breeze did put there was a lot of chin locks, you know, a lot of wearing and tearing the face, you know, during the match. So it did feel a little different. And off the top of my head, I can't remember a match where Finn Balor has been put in that position. So I'm not sure.
In a few matches. His debut match, a few hits went up against him. The Kevin Owens match, obviously, had a lot of the face and peril mechanics and everything. But when he's actually been in the face paint, I mean, even down to when he fought Adrian Neville at the NXT San Jose show,
yeah,
he took some heavy hits. He even took a red arrow and, you know, a near pinfall, but never was there, like, a strong seed of, you know, heel heat being driven on him or, you know, being put as that face in peril, like you said, and everything. He's never entered that John Cena realm of, like, this guy is super powerful, but he's going to get wrecked for a little while.
Right, which is also how they've been booking Roman Reigns for the past, what, 3 months? But before we go too much into the match, what did you think of the entrances that they had? The WrestleMania-esque entrances they had for Tyler Breeze and Finn Balor.
Alright, so I know you're going to hate me for this. I know most people are going to hate me for this. But god damn if Tyler Breeze didn't have the best entrance of the night. Like,
yeah,
that entrance was so cool. Like, it felt... It had such a runway model feel, and it came out, and it was like the babyface supermodel, not babyface supermodel, but like the supermodel equivalent of Bray Wyatt's entrance with the Crows, because he has four beautiful women all in the big hoodies that he wears and the fur. And they're just walking around taking selfies in circles and everything. And then they all post up, and Tyler comes out, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's Tyler! And and each one of them leans over, and he, like, takes the selfie while, like, fixing a different thing of his appearance. Like, he plucks his eyebrow with the first one, and then takes the selfie. And then he leans in with the other one, and he, like, wipes his lips just to make sure that they're glossed right. And then he takes the selfie, and then the next one slicks his hair. So, like, he's, like, metrosexualing out on every detail as he goes through, and you're all like, that's so freaking Tyler Breeze that it's perfect for this whole thing. And it just had this awesome feel of fun to it. Whereas, like, Finn Balor, like, he's evolving into, like, further levels of demon.
Mm-hmm. The eyeball. The eyeball Magamoto.
Exactly. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, I've seen you crawl. I've seen you do the waves. Like, like, cool. Boogeyman did it. Like,
yeah, I did enjoy the Tyler Breeze entrance. Like, I thought that was a nice touch. I actually like that everyone, and this goes back to what I've been saying about, like, pay-per-views and the way the current system of pay-per-views since, like, you know, 1997 or whatever has been, where it's every month we get a pay-per-view. So we're kind of, like, immune to it. And I think WWE only tries to have, like, better or grander entrances for WrestleMania and or, like, Survivor Series and maybe Royal Rumble. But for these, because they're so spread out, they all feel very, you know, very, very special. So they do these grand entrances, and they've been doing it a lot more. Like, I've noticed the past three, I think, the entrances for certain people have been modified. And we see this, again, happen twice again during the night. And this was the first time that we've seen, like, Tyler Breeze have, like, a grander entrance. And like you said, it was perfect. It was just the perfect Tyler Breeze entrance that we could have gotten at this point of his career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I actually really did like Finn Balor's new entrance, and I really like how they're changing several bits of his design as the demon comes out. Because the first time, it was, you know, the teeth on his neck. And then the second time, like, the teeth had a tongue inside of it, and he had a little bit more black down the back. And then this time, he's got, you know, spikes on his back and an wings. Eye underneath them and wings. You're like, what
by the time,
at the next NXT? Like, by the time he comes out to WrestleMania, he's going to be flying on an actual dragon, you know, entirely coated in black, having Wolverine's claws, Savage Dragon's frickin' frill, Spawn's chains, like,
I'm calling it right now. By the time we see him at WrestleMania, he's going to resemble Tim Curry in Legend. Like, he will have giant horns, you know,
and he's going to dance with a woman and fear a unicorn. On his way to the ring, he will kill a unicorn, and everybody will be like, "That's the heel. I finally get it. He killed a unicorn."
Like, he slowly becomes. Like, this is what he's become.
I like that, like, a demon is possibly the biggest face in NXT.
Right?
Besides Sami Zayn, a demon is the most likable guy. Love that.
Now, and that's not, like, because of lack of depth in the roster. It just so happens that he's just incredibly over. That's nothing to do with anyone else's inability to be over, because everyone in this mini promotion thing is super over. I mean, I think the least over people in this entire promotion is probably Blake and Murphy. And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that.
Well, I think you are exaggerating it, because of the fact that you said least over, implying the fact that they're over what?
Fine, they're not over at all.
They are negative over. They are under. They are the most under team in NXT, or in professional wrestling, really. Like, ouch.
Oh, man.
How, they are still tag team champions. Like the crowd, like, boos so hard at them, but not in reaction to, like, heelish things that they do. It's just like, oh, god damn it, still Blake and Murphy? Like, it's Heath Slater syndrome. Like, they only have a job because they're so bad at it that nobody likes them, and it's being construed as heat. It's not heat, it's apathy.
In its purest form.
And people are not able to emote apathy well.
Yeah. And, I mean, we'll get to Blake and Murphy eventually, and their Heath Slater levels of apathy. Like, I really don't care for them at all. Like, I don't even want to talk about them, except that they're in a match with my favorite tag team right now, so...
But Tyler Breeze, like, though. Holy hell, that dude's super kick. I need to figure out, because he's got the beauty shot and a few other things. What I think he really needs to refine is identifying a big finish spot.
Because he has, like, four finishes.
That they don't have him... Yeah, he has four finishes, exactly. But they don't have him... go over a whole lot because of the fact that he's the heel and he's the pretty boy model. Like, you can't have him look too strong at the same time. But I never really get his hit. And if he's gonna stick with the beauty shot, he's gotta, like, Shawn Michaels it in there. Like, how many people have done the super kick in wrestling? Like, honestly.
A lot of people. But you know what?
Shawn Michaels is the super kick. Like,
yeah, but I like his... something in there. There's two reasons why I like the Tyler Breeze super kick, and I don't mind it being his finisher, if that's going to be his finisher or his signature. One, his frilly leg, whatever those are, like, it just makes it look hilarious.
Oh, the Uggs?
Like, yeah, the... Is it Uggs? Like, what is he wearing? I don't know.
The big fur boots, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about how he's got, like, boots?
I guess they're boots. I always thought it was something on top of the boot. Like, Uggs boot on top tops. Of Uggs. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that, and the fact that it's the supermodel kick. So, I already hate, you know how much I hate just calling something Superman anything, but calling it supermodel kick... instant heel. Like, I love that. Like, I have no problem with that. And it just fits him perfectly.
You see, the reason I still, to this day, don't get your hatred of the Superman punch is that's a punch Superman has used, and it existed, but, like, they didn't decide to call Roman...
No, I know. Superman I just punch. Don't, like... Because calling anything Superman that, anything.
They've called it that in MMA for 10 years.
I know. And I still hate
jumps it. Off the ring and
still hate the name.
Jumps off the cage and does the punch. Superman punch. Wow, type thing. It's Roman Reigns does it and he's like, ooh rah, and he cocks the gun and everything like that. Somebody did that in UFC. If somebody does that at UFC this Saturday, and everything.
Wait, they cock the punch?
Mark out. If they cock the punch, I will run around my room like, oh my god, it's just Superman, Roman Reigns, Roman Reigns.
Yeah, my distaste is not because, like, it's just calling it Superman anything. Like, it's just my distaste for the character, and or just naming anything Superman anything, regardless of whether it's existed in MMA or any sport. Like,
references to Superman.
The minute you've referenced Superman, you lost me.
So, anyways, there's this new issue of Superman that came out.
I say that after reading, like, 30 New 52 Superman issues and liking them. Like, I don't...
of all things, right?
Yeah.
Anyways. So, Tyler Breeze, he got in some good shots, but I never really felt like any of them could have been a finish. And it's not for, you know, lack of impact or lack of selling of the finish. Like, because he got some two counts. Mm-hmm. It's just I didn't believe any of those two counts were going to be able to let him win.
I'll tell you this much. I know you don't like the stomp. We've agreed that you don't like the Finn Balor stump as a finisher, correct?
I just don't like the stump as a finisher.
Okay. And we know that. We accept that. What did you think of the stump when he stumped Tyler Breeze's back outside of the ring?
So not the finish stomp.
Yeah, the mid-match stump.
Great. I like the stomp as a mid-match thing. Like,
I thought he had killed him.
The stomp should be utilized... like a DDT.
Mm-hmm. A setup.
don't get stone cold on me now. Whoa. Not like a setup and not like a transition or anything, but as something that almost put the guy out, but you get a long two out of it, or it's really impressive when the guy gets up,
mm-hmm.
but that shouldn't be your finish. Signature, right. Sure. Like you should have to store that before you can use your signature or something like that. But right. to me, the stomp is akin to Triple H's, you know, big spine buster.
Yeah, the arm buster.
Or Randy Orton's, you know, second rope DDT.
Right.
Anything along those lines. Like,
it's just not like the punt.
Exactly. It doesn't feel like a finish. And yes, I recognize that it is a 200 plus pound dude flying through the air and stomping on another dude.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a finish in any world other than professional wrestling.
Right. Like, if Bray Wyatt did that, no. You'd be dead.
Bray Wyatt just did, like, a back splash onto a dude, and I thought, and a big buff dude, and I was like, that dude is dead.
I thought, yeah, I was like, Ryback is dead. Like, yeah. He's killed him.
Bray just claimed a soul.
Nice.
But with Finn, just something about that, and especially, I think it's because of the fact that he has Bloody Sunday in his arsenal,
mm-hmm.
and that is a finish right there. And that he's only used it, the only time I've ever seen him use it is in the live show. Like, he still uses it as Finn Balor, but he doesn't use it on the, you know, televised major matches.
Right.
Which I find so peculiar, because Bloody Sunday, like, that sounds like a move a demon would use, too, so.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he's just saving it, just like how Hideo was saving the GTS. Like, how they teased it for how long? 6 months? 8 months? Like, I can't even remember. It felt...
I mean, despite the fact that they, like, posted it on that episode of NXT that had, like, the follow Hideo Itami mm-hmm. special... And they talked about, like, wow, he used the GTS or whatever. At the
right.
same time, like, he's still not using it on NXT programming. Like, people didn't get to see him do the GTS unless they were there.
Right.
So.
And I don't think they showed it. Did they show it on the, did they show that on
Ways
the WWE Network when they were showing...
Not actual recordings of it. It was all the fan recordings online, like, kind of zoomed in on him.
Okay.
Like.
Hmm.
But yeah, just a solid hit. But I just want something more than the punt. So maybe that's my problem with this match. Well, it was a really good match and had so much back and forth. Neither guy has a defined enough finish in my feelings to make me interested in that match.
Yeah.
Feel the feeling of that match.
Yeah. Feel for a proper resolution, basically. Like, I feel like that is the problem. Mostly with Tyler Breeze, because I do like the stomp as a finish. I have no problem with that being a finish. But I do think that Tyler Breeze needs to identify a solid finish and stick to that. Because right now it feels like he has four of them. And I don't know when to exactly go like, oh man, this is it. This is the end of the match. So. But like you said, great starter though. And I mean, new contender. That's always good.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said before, the option to still have Hideo Itami, you know, staking his claim to being number one contender is very much well in hand. Especially, I think, NXT benefits from the fact that they are not a monthly pay-per-view system. They're a bi-monthly mm-hmm. pay-per-view system.
Yeah.
So I think they benefit from the fact that they get to have a longer road to
the
title match
mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, the... God, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, their contendership feels earned. Anytime there's a contender for the NXT Championship, it feels earned. And the champion, by default, seems stronger because they've held it for, you know, that much longer. I think that's also why it's easier to do year-long reigns. That's why Adrian Neville had, like, a monstrous reign, you know, because of their format.
Yeah, but, I mean, Neville was so good.
No, I understand that, but I think the perspective, too, like, you know, like, he was good. I'm not saying he's not, but it's easier to imprint that perspective mm-hmm. by having longer gaps between your pay-per-views. I'm calling it the San Martino effect right now.
Well, I don't understand, because Bruno Sammartino wrestled 7 days a week and twice on Sundays.
Up and down the hill.
all of them title matches that went over 30 minutes.
Every single match, nah.
No, yeah. I mean, I fully believe the fact that Bruno wrestled as much as he said he did, because they were crazy in those days.
Yeah.
And they worked their people to the bone, but I don't think that he put the title on the line more than once every, like, 2 months. Like, it was a special attraction when he did that.
Yeah, and not only that, but
just lifting stuff, because he was really strong.
Let's be real. I mean, no offense to Bruno Sammartino, one of the greats, but I don't think his title defenses resembled in any way, shape, or form Adrian Neville's title defenses.
Very true. I mean,
put that out there.
I mean, impressive shows and very physical effects, but, I mean, just think about it. I mean, I really like the fact that Stone Cold has gone on record and admitted this, like, himself, and several others have. Like, the athletes of today are way better athletes than those of 10 years ago, who were better than those of, you know, 20 years ago. Like they're evolving in ability and, you know, things that they can do. But wrestling is just funnier because of the fact that they have to follow the storyline and the plot that sometimes mm-hmm. you can still say, you know, it was better in them old days or in the Attitude Era or anything.
Right.
Because you like that storyline. Like, nobody's going to shit on you because you like The Wizard of Oz, even though it's like 60 years old or something like that.
And a shit like, movie. No.
All right. Nobody's going to shit on you because you like Citizen Kane. Like,
there you go.
Jesus.
Wizard of Oz.
Didn't realize someone was going to, like, trash Wizard of Oz. One of the best fucking movies of all time.
I absolutely detest that movie. Hate that movie.
We're not going to talk about this now, but it's going to be returned to you because you're hurting my soul.
My fandom. No, but you're right, though, about the...
Nobody would be mad that you like a movie or a storyline or a book that's, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years old mm-hmm. and everything. Those things are timeless. So the story that Sammartino presented is going to be different than the story that The Rock presented. That's going to be different than the story that John Cena presented. It's going to be different than the story Kevin Owens presents. And yeah. Those are stories. But nobody's really going out there and being like, oh, you know, Chuck Jones was a better basketball player than LeBron James or something. Just, nice. I mean, even if, you know, they had certain numbers and everything, you have to take into effect the, you know, evolution of the game and the way they change things. So many people there's so many superstars in basketball today because they all watched Jordan. And so they adapted the Jordan moves. Like Jordan said in an interview once himself, he's like, Kofi might be able to beat me because he stole all my moves. Which is true. So, like, they can watch tape and they can see, wow, this worked, this was amazing, and move on. And wrestlers, they can watch tape and do that, but it's got so much of a psychology because you have to put on a show simultaneously. So when people try to shit on wrestlers because they're not athletes, they've got to go out there and do an athletic thing, but also at the same time think about the psychology and the plot and the story that they're trying to tell. It's hard.
Oh, yeah, it's incredibly hard. And because, I mean, they basically have to be a one-take actor that's also a stuntman and be flawless at both. Because if not, you're out. Like, that's pretty much what the business is. Like, if you're not absolutely flawless in your performance on both ends, like, if you're a really crappy actor and a really great wrestler, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't matter. Like, we've seen that before where really great wrestlers just get the boot. Because they just couldn't make it in the, you know, they couldn't portray the character well or even follow their own psychology well. And then you have the flip side, where you have these great characters, great actors, can't really wrestle that well.
Which,
I mean, some of those
having a better career than...
Yeah, but those had a better career back in, like, the 70s, 80s, you know. Some of the 90s had a little bit of that. I mean, I strongly believe that we're living, like, the golden age of, like, wrestling as far as their performance. Like, this is, like, the best wrestling as far as, like, the ring product.
And it's so available. I mean, you have to think about the fact that, well, I'm not even talking about the network, but, yeah, the network.
I know.
but it's just so readily available because, I mean, people talked about, you know, the Monday Night Wars. That was the best, and so much was available to us because WCW and WWE were pushing each other on Monday nights, and we had to flip back and forth and everything like that. It's like, yo, now we got DVR. Like now we got WWE Raw, SmackDown, NXT,
Superstars,
TNA, Impact, sort of, maybe not.
I was going to say TNA.
Lucha Underground.
ROH.
ROH. Like
New
all
Japan.
These things, New Japan. You know, Jeff Jarrett's new thing, GPW, like, or GFW. So many things are available that you can get to watch it. Plus, the internet's there, and you can just YouTube and be all like, I want to watch, you know, Stan Hansen fight against Antonio Inoki. Boom. And you know what? If you're listening in and Stan Hansen never actually fought Antonio Inoki, I'm sorry.
I'm sure they fought. I'm sure that's happened.
I just don't want to be, you know, actually.
If anything, let's go with Stan Hansen versus Vader. We all know that match happened for sure.
True, that one did happen.
And it was brutal.
Savage.
Straight savage.
Vader. What a
but yeah, I really think, you know, this reality era there that we're living, it's probably one of the better eras as far as, like, story-wise. And I mean in every way, because we are, because of the advent of, like, social media and, like you said, availability, like, you know, YouTube, the network, and all these other ways, like Dailymotion, all these ways that we can intake the product and then at the same time give them immediate feedback, they've been adapting to what we want to watch. And that's more, that becomes more and more obvious to me the more NXT keeps adapting to us. Like, it seems like NXT right now is being molded to exactly what we want it to be. Whereas Raw and SmackDown are still kind of like, yeah, we're trying to go against the grain, this and that. And I think it's because that's being ran by not so much different people, but there's an older environment there. Whereas you can tell that NXT, you know, like, it's new, younger, hungry people that are trying something different.
And no one is hungrier than heavyweight champion Kevin Owens. I'm going to stop teasing Kevin Owens for being bad because he's going to beat me up and he looks good.
I was going to say, he is going to destroy you.
I'll be all like, oh, you're looking in a mirror. And then just
yeah. So the next match of the night, I have a confession to make about the next match.
I liked her new outfit, Dana Brooke. I liked it. It was different, but I liked it. Had the holes and the lace and everything. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, and I like the two person act she's got going on with Emma. It's kind of like a weird lay cool gimmick that they got going on now.
Ooh, I see that. I see that.
Yeah, like, you know, it's kind of like lay cool 2.0, except that you have a very, very strong woman in the equation. And I know, not even 2 weeks ago, I think, 2-3 weeks ago, they shit all over the last pay-per-view for having a Divas tag team match. And I wanted to shit on this match for being a Divas tag team match. But man, what a good match it was. Like, only 6 minutes long, or 6:51, you know, 7 minutes. But still so good. And it had everyone that's basically a contender for the title.
I think
so, I mean,
you're less bothered by the fact that it's a Divas Tag Team Champion or a Women's Tag Team Championship match, or, I'm sorry, not championship, but a Women's Tag Team match on the pay-per-view due to the fact that it didn't come at the cost of the Women's Championship being defended.
That too.
Still got an amazing women's championship match.
Maybe that's what it is. You know what? I think...
So it's not a problem, you know, because, you know, like I've said, I don't have a problem of having a women's tag team match on Raw or to, you know, further a storyline or... Because tag team matches, ultimately, tag team matches for singles competitors are utilized so that you can have the big payoff of the singles match occur, but you have to wait for it, and you don't get that full feeling type thing. You have the heel kind of tagging out to his opponent so he doesn't have to be in there with, you know, the strong baby face. And you had a lot of that in this match and everything like that. Emma didn't want any part of Bayley, like, at all. And that was the whole setup. And, you know, Charlotte has been saying, you know, I'm naturally better than you, Dana Brooke. Like, you had to work for it. I'm just this good.
Yeah. Like, I was born this way, sort of thing.
Which I'm still waiting to get behind Charlotte's face gimmick. Like, she's ready in every aspect of being a wrestler and promo ability. It's just with the gimmick of, like, naturally superior, that's such a heel thing.
Yeah.
And Ric Flair was only a good face just based on the fact of, you know, 30, 40 years of being
a heel,
amazing wrestler and a face. And there's a point where when you've been in it so long and you've been so good so long that people just naturally love you.
I honestly do think that she should remain a heel for a long, long time. Like, she should go back to being a heel and stay that way for at least 10 years. Like, if she's got 10 years in the business, she needs to do 10 years as a heel. She should never be a face.
Yeah.
And that's just because I think she would find more success. It's kind of like the Lana thing with Rusev now, how, you know, they're slowly turning her.
And they're killing
her. Yeah, like, that character is going to, like, the character is committing, like, suicide, basically, if she becomes a face.
Nothing you can do with her as a face manager. What the hell is a face manager? Like, she's going to be Miss Elizabeth and just clap for a dude, outside the ring? Like,
she's technically already Miss Elizabeth. Think about it. Like, she's already doing that. Like, everyone loves her, but hates the person she's managing. It's exactly what happened to Macho Man back in the 80s, where everyone loved
break
him.
Off, like, she didn't, like, break off and, like, you know, straightforward, you know, make out with Hulk Hogan.
No,
Hulk Hogan just carried her out because he was worried that she was hurt, and then Macho was like, you touch my woman!
I don't think that would have worked in the... Could you imagine if in the 80s, Miss Elizabeth just would have made out with Hogan? Like, what?
People would have been like, hussy! You're hussy! Oh my god! And then, like, they would have read their dirt sheet on their friggin' typewriter, and they would have been like, oh my gosh, she's with Lex Luger.
I don't think they had dirt sheets back then.
They were literally dirt sheets. They were...
Yeah. Oh my god. But anyway, great, great tag match. And again, like, I wanted, like, the second they announced, oh, there's going to be a women's tag match at NXT TakeOver Unstoppable, and I was like, oh... Well, that's shit. But then it happened, and I was like, oh, wait, we're still getting an NXT Women's Championship match. Never mind, I can deal with this.
Yeah, I honestly think that's what saves it for you, because it didn't come at the detriment. Like,
that'd be a good match.
No, the title wasn't on the line at WrestleMania for the women, and the title wasn't on the line at Payback for the women.
Yeah.
That just hurts it, and it makes you not care.
Which I think is a problem of depth in the main roster for the Divas. But in developmental, there's no problem with the... Like, if anything, they have so many storylines with
it. Here's the thing. Why is there a problem with depth in the main roster? Because...
I don't know.
Think about this. Let me just shoot it down. NXT women's roster. I'm gonna list it off right here. Sasha Banks, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Bayley, Emma, Dana Brooke, and Carmella... And Alexa Bliss. There's eight.
So, eight.
Like, that's all I can think of. I can't think of anyone else.
You could have a promotion with all of those.
And yeah, you could do a lot with those eight. But on the main roster, Nikki Bella, Brie Bella, Alicia Fox, Naomi, Paige, no longer AJ Lee.
Tamina. Natty.
Natalia, exactly. I mean, just Cameron, so many people that you have. Layla. They've still got a few others that I know I'm forgetting. Lana.
But let's add her just because, you know, like, she could wrestle.
So, like, that's 10 versus 8. Like, and NXT only has 1 hour once a week to do a show.
And there's all more 8 of those story. Women
have plenty of stuff to do. Whereas you've got 3 hours Raw, 2 hours SmackDown, 1 hour Superstars, and 1 hour Main Event. And, Rosa Mendez.
Eva Marie.
Eva Marie. So many.
Wow. There is a lot more.
Yeah, so many. And so you've got all of these women, and you've got, what was that, 3, 2, 1, 1. So you got 7 hours of product a week against NXT's 1, and you can't make me care? Like, you can't make me have a title match?
Yeah, and again, I really honestly think it's, like, the difference in management. Like, whoever is booking, because I have no idea who books NXT, other than I know Triple H has a lot of power over what happens in NXT. But I don't know who's the people actually booking this. Like, I don't know who's under him doing the booking for the show. And I know they have Sarah Del Rey training the women down there, which
Matt Bloom, aka
Prince Albert,
Benzai Albert,
yeah,
is the head coordinator for everything.
Oh, so he's the head booker.
He's the head.
Holy hell, he's.
And his assistant coach is Sarah Del Rey.
So wait, Matt Bloom is booking NXT?
I don't know that he's officially booking it, but he is head coach and in charge of, like, everything there.
Because, man, if that's coming from him, that dude needs a raise. Just saying.
Yeah, and, like, his number two is Sarah Del Rey. So,
like, whenever Michael Hayes decides he doesn't want to run SmackDown or whatever it is that he's doing nowadays, like, please bump this bro up.
Well, Michael Hayes should be done. Like, all of his shenanigans, and I mean, he's road daddy to so many people, but
mm-hmm.
he's also just insane, and there are issues there.
Freebird's rule, nah.
Freebird rules. Freebird rules. I like the Freebird rule, but I'm not shitting on, like, the Freebird pass, like, but there's only so long that you can be an insane old man and, like, doing weird, crazy, horrible shit, like screaming the N-word right in somebody's face. Like,
That was on a SmackDown show, right? Yeah.
And he did it to Mark Henry, so I was conflicted. But
because you hate him, but you at the same time you're like, no, not like that.
But he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't deserve a job. Let me just I mean, you can't go like, but I was a legend. It's like, yeah, cool. I'll watch your tapes. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, like I mean. And that's not saying that the people, like the bookers and road agents and whatnot of the regular roster are bad. They've obviously been on point lately. They've been way better. But NXT is so consistent. And I kind of like consistency in my entertainment. Like, I really, really like consistency. And I don't think I've ever watched NXT, a single show or a single of these pay-per-views. Is that what they call them, pay-per-views? Like, is there, like, an official name for these?
Special episode.
Special episode? All right, whatever. So, I don't think I've ever seen a single one, either weekly or the special episodes, where I tilted my head and went, that sounds wrong. Or you know, like, there's a plot hole here. Like, I've never had that happen yet. It's very tight, very solid.
There have been a few, like,
very small
type things, but really they're just like,
we're not picking at that
point. Yeah, exactly. Like the ultimate product, and I mean, by far, I'm not going anywhere near the level of, like, NXT can do no wrong, or they're above or
right.
Sure, anything along those lines, that's stupid.
Because there is, like, things that we're gonna reproach.
Like, when they have a shitty show, trust me, Cyan is gonna bring the flame. But
whoa.
But they haven't. And they've been good shows top to bottom. I mean, what, last month they had one sinker, and this month they had really zero? Like, even shitty Blake and Murphy had a good match with, you know, Enzo and Kaz.
I think that the only stinker is the next match, really. If we're going to pick a stinker, it's the next match.
You know what? I disagree.
And it's not. No?
I disagree. I thought that was a very good match.
No.
We're talking about the tag match, or we're talking about Baron Corbin and Rhino?
Baron Corbin and Rhino.
Okay, well, before we discuss that one and have a little bit of an argument, I still have a little bit more about Bayley, Charlotte, and Dana Brooke and Emma. Were you as disappointed as I was in the entrance that Dana Brooke didn't do her no-hands cartwheel?
Yeah, because I remember, well, we saw that live.
We saw it live, but we saw it on episodes a few times. Mm-hmm. And that's such a cool-ass thing that she does that makes me go like, wow, I need to watch this woman type thing. And she didn't do it, and she just did her arm wave thing, and I'm like, don't brag that you didn't do it. Like,
do you think maybe it was to get heat? Do you think...
withholding a move to get heat?
Right.
You can't do that for your entrance. Like, you can get heat by, like, withholding something like if Randy Orton, you know, posed for an RKO, and then, like, the dude came up and he just, like, clotheslined the shit out of him and got the 1-2-3, that would get heat. Like, people would be like, boo, no RKO, this is bullshit, or something like that. But to not do... maybe, but at that point, I think we're booking, like, excuses.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's a small thing. I honestly think the fact that you're irritated at it tells me that it might have been like, hey, no, don't do that. People are kind of, like, marking for that. Kind of like the Cesaro thing. When he was doing the big swing, they're like, you're a heel. Stop doing that. Like people are way too hype for that move, so don't do it as a heel.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, like, I'm not, like, mad that Emma's not doing her stupid stomp thing or the karate dance and stuff. I mean, she storyline explained why she's not, but still.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're looking too much into this fan thing.
Charlotte did an amazing... her forward cartwheel, but she did it on the ramp, which made me just go, that's really impressive, because you're on a decline doing a forward cartwheel. Wow.
No hands, yeah.
You amazing, amazing woman.
Most guys in the roster are like, how?
Every guy in the roster. Like,
except Adrian Neville.
There's no man... who can do the things that Charlotte does just on the benefit of her being both incredibly genetically athletic and a woman. Like, a woman's going to be more flexible and able to do things in a different way than a man can. So, like, none of them can do those type of things. Like,
she does. She is, like, how tall is she?
She is the Ronda Rousey of women's wrestling, just in the pure fact that she is, like... I know it's gimmick, but she literally is genetically better than everyone else in her division. Like, anyone else has to work so much harder to be on her level. And that's why I think this is Sasha Banks' best match coming up in this card tonight, because it was her first major match not with Charlotte. So people finally get to look and see and say that it wasn't Charlotte carrying.
I don't think people, well, I mean, there might have been some.
Some have, and I mean, you get to finally prove yourself. Like, Sheamus won the championship against John Cena, but, like, that didn't matter until he finally defended his championship against a different competitor. And, and you finally see that person having great championship matches against other contenders.
Other people, yeah.
Type thing, because, I mean, how many people have had a great match with Shawn Michaels? Everyone?
I would argue that almost everyone has
almost
had a
everyone,
great match. Yeah.
But have all of those people gone on to have great matches with their other competitors? Nah,
exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, Charlotte can make pretty much anyone look good. But for Sasha to go on and have match of the night on a card with Charlotte and other people there, that's finally her proving point, and that's why it's her best match. Baron Corbin and Rhino, they had the big show off, and it's pretty much the new young lone wolf up against, you know, the aging man beast, who still can deliver a big hit. I mark for the gore. I love
his the spirit. Gore. The gore is still a pretty cool move to watch, just because of Rhino, the way he does it.
Kind of reminds me of anyone else's spear.
Yeah, he has a different. Yeah, it's hence gore. You know, they don't scream spear. Like it is a gorge. He's kind of like Brock Lesnar in the sense, like, he's a big dude that has no business moving that fast. Especially, you know, when it comes time to do the gore. Like, he's a bullet. Actually, he's more like a cannonball.
Yeah, he is built like a tank. This dude's not as big as most people, but he's just got huge arms, tree trunk thighs, and just wide. Like, but he's not fat. Like, I've never thought he was fat. He's just a big dude, and he just comes at you, and he hits you like a wrecking ball. Like, Miley Cyrus is flying on his back, smashing through things. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know. I know you have your reservations about Baron Corbin. I know a lot of people have their reservations about
him. They're not reservations. They're just doubts.
Like, I'm not saying he's a great wrestler, because he's not. He's, just like I was talking before, there's some people that are great wrestlers and great at, you know, great at being, like, their character, actor, whatever. Obviously, he fits in the, he's good at whatever his gimmick is, the lone wolf thing, whatever he's doing. I get it. Doesn't have a whole lot of technology. I think what's happening to him, and I don't know who, if it's like, this character has to exist somewhere in both, like, the WWE Universe, NXT Universe, TNA. Every wrestling promotion has this guy. The quiet dude that's really strong, that does, like, two moves, and, you know, that's it.
Yep.
And
that was the good thing about this match, and why I wouldn't call it a sinker, is it's his first match where it was a legitimate back and forth. Like, Bull Dempsey, we thought was finally going to be the one because of the way that they had the simultaneous build. And that ended up crumbling because Baron Corbin just walked over him three straight. Like, it was the Cena Rusev treatment right there. Like, absolute devastation all the way through. Like, one man was booked clearly inferior. This one had an actual back and forth. It was the first time Baron Corbin seemed to have a test. And he rose up and, you know, he brought out new things. Like, were they great things? No, but for the fact that he was actually challenged and he put through, and there was no point in the match I was bored or thinking, like, oh, okay, this is exactly how this is going to go.
There was a couple of curveballs here. There was a couple of curveballs. I mean, it had the ending that I think we all knew was going to be the ending. But just like we've said before, you know, knowing the ending doesn't take away from the match, like, if the journey is still good. And again, it's the stinker of the show, but saying this is a stinker is not like shitting on the match. It's just saying that everything else was so much better that this feels like the lesser match of the show. And it's not their fault, really. It's just, this is the characters that they're playing, this is the story that they're telling, and it's not the story that people wanted in that particular show to be told. So again, I still think it's, if we have to pick, if we have to pick, like, the weakest match of the night.
It's the next.
You think it's the next match?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm all about that resolution. I need that resolution in my life, and Baron Corbin, at the very least, gave me that. They had the back and forth, and, you know, at the end, and he took a gore, and he got up, and, and so I think Baron Corbin, and I think they kind of looked at the way Roman Reigns is being handled. So
yeah,
Roman Reigns,
very similar,
being handled that he was being given everything and all these things, and then all of a sudden they're all like, you know, people are shitting on Roman Reigns, even though he's really good, and And Roman Reigns is way better than Baron Corbin. I'm not saying any like direct comparison on that. I'm just looking.
I would say current Roman Reigns, even promo wise, because he's improved a lot, is miles above Baron Corbin.
Oh yeah. But Roman Reigns, you know, they thought he was being given everything, and that, you know, he was, you know, the strong aggressor crushing things and everything. Then he goes in there with Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar brings him through Suplex City. And then he goes in there with Big Show, and Big Show rains KO punches, and, like, he comes in with a chair, swings the chair, Big Show slaps it away, laughs in his face, says, "I'm a giant, what are you doing?" Like, throws him around, beats the crap out of him, and Roman Reigns, each time, rises through these things, and, embattled, beats him down. Like, Baron Corbin, like, it's cool that you get your cred by having these, you know, 10-second squashes, 30-second squashes, and winning these things. The Goldberg build, exactly. And then, now, finally, you've had this match. You're up against a dude, Rhino, and you come through, and you finally get that win at the end. I kind of have to respect that a little bit, even if I don't think Baron Corbin's good. But right. I really don't think Blake and Murphy are good. And shenanigans. So that's why I would say Blake and Murphy are the weakest match on the card here. But Enzo and Cass came out. Their usual fanfare, nothing really special about their entrance. Their usual fanfare.
Which I thought was weird considering all those special entrances we got in the
Exactly. I think the most special thing about their entrance was that Carmella was wearing I don't know what the hell. And leather that said "How you doing" on it, and all sorts of stuff. But she's so great in the manager role, but they didn't. I feel that she wasn't utilized.
Yeah, I don't think she was utilized
at all as a manager. I mean,
yeah.
And so we had the run in and the heel turn unexpectedly for Alexa Bliss. Here's why I don't like that.
So she broke my heart. If we're gonna go that route,
broke
my heart.
So Regan here is absolutely in love with Alexa Bliss.
Oh man, we have no idea.
As are probably most straight young males. But
Bliss.
But there's so much ability for her as a face, and I get it, it's developmental, so they're probably trying, they don't want to send anyone up to main roster until they've proven themselves as face and as heel, like, give them TV experience as both.
Yeah, I just don't think they want her to become stale, and I know she's not been there long enough, but, like, her act is kind of, like, you know, silly, I guess. And they are lacking in the heel department.
But here's my thing that I was building to.
Hmm.
Why attach her to those two to bring her heel? Those two aren't going to have the meteor push of bringing her in as a bad guy. Like if you put her along with pretty much any other bad guy group and she was helping them out, it would work much better. But with her, with Blake and Murphy, I don't get the similarities. Like, for Carmella to join with Enzo and Cass, the realest guys in the room, I get that, because they're all Jersey Shore trash type of thing, right? Like, they're all going to act that way. And for her to join with Blake and Murphy, like, I don't get the link up with that.
Yeah, I don't get the connection either.
And she just had these, you know, heartbreaking close losses and everything like that. She didn't get as close as many of the others, but she had, you know, a good match with Sasha Banks, a good match with Becky Lynch, like a few other people, and she's got that, you know, purity effect to her, that she's a good face in the same way that Bayley is, that, like, Bayley can be that inspiring to the young girls in the audience, and, like, God knows that if they have any brain, WWE needs to start marketing to their female audience more, too. Because there's a lot of women who watch that Total Divas and want to go through and try to, you know, get a little bit more of the experience in there. Give Divas a chance, type thing. So those young fans to be built up. I mean, like, Bailey does it perfectly. The little tiara pass-off and everything.
Yeah.
How she's doing the slap bands. Alexa Bliss could have been
Bailey,
like that.
Bailey is basically Bret the Hitman Hart. Like,
oh, totally.
Early 90s, you know, Hitman Hart.
Just with more ring ability.
Yeah. Jesus.
I'm kidding.
I'm not even going to touch that.
I'm kidding. But, yeah, I just don't get the connection there. Enzo and Cass had a great build-up. Really fun talk from Enzo, as usual. But the shenanigans at the end, tell him how break and move he got the win. Because I was just sitting there scratching my head.
Well, I mean, I don't exactly, like, remember how she came. Because I know she came out and... Did she hit someone? Because I can't...
It was sparkle dust.
It was a sparkle... Yeah, that... It was sparkle dust. Why? Yeah, she just came out of nowhere. Because I remember just being like, what? Because she came out of nowhere. Did the sparkle dust, you know, got the... was it Murphy or Blade that held the tights after the sparkle dust?
I could not tell either of them apart.
Yeah, me neither. They're both ridiculous. Like, that's probably one thing.
The one that had 90s Jericho hair and the one that had 90s Diesel hair. Like,
oh, that's right. One of them did have pigtails.
Pigtails. Like, I don't even know. Like, yeah. They were doing everything, like, aesthetically to piss me off possible. Like, I was just sitting there and be like, I don't like you at all.
And I guess, like, is that a successful heel or not? I don't know.
Like I said earlier, I can't understand if they are good heels because I hate them so much, but I don't hate them because they're good bad guys. I hate them because they're stupid and they have the worst theme in the world.
I honestly think everything. I honestly think everything about them is
annoying.
To ensure that you're pissed off. And I think them being champs, like, isn't supposed to irritate you.
That crowd was so hot the entire night.
Oh yeah. Then again, great, what NXT crowd?
Great chance.
What NXT crowd has not been hot? Let's be clear.
There have been several that weren't as good as this one. This one was on point with everything. And like calling out every single bit for what should be going on.
Almost as good as San Jose.
Well, nothing can be good as that. But but the way that they were calling out all these little things was fantastic. And for the entire crowd, when Blake and Murphy won, like, it wasn't a boo, it wasn't an awe, it wasn't a damn or anything along those lines. Like, you heard a loud-ass huh. Like, listen to the end of that match at the finish, and when the bell rings and they see that it is Blake and Murphy, it's just like audible confusion from the 4,000 people in attendance, because they are so stunned that Enzo and Cass, the most over tag team in the industry right now, yeah. I would say, did not get the titles. It's like, you're not going to give those two a run? Like, come on. Those speeches.
I think there was a collective lolwood.
Yeah.
When it ended. Like,
it was an absolute LOL what. Oh, man.
Poor guys. Like, but again, like I said, I think this is all on purpose to have, like, the most over guys, and then, like, the guys that... It seems that... I don't think I've met a single person or heard of a single person that likes Blake and Murphy. So I guess...
Blake's from the mom and Murphy's mom.
I guess from the perspective of, like, you know, heel faces, like, and how it's supposed to work. Like, I mean, you are supposed to hate the heels. Like, that's how it worked for decades, you know, before everyone got up and, you know, got to know, you know, how it all worked. So for all intents and purposes, you know, it's kind of like a callback to that era. Like, we just don't like him in any way, shape, or form. And we want him to get beaten.
I guess that's true, and I guess I can respect that.
Answer this question. Answer this question. Do you want them beaten?
Yeah.
Do you want the titles off of them?
Yes.
Then they are absolutely doing their job.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's totally true. And I mean, I recognize that it's just so annoying to see them because I can't even, like, defend them in any sort of way that, that like, well, they did get blah, 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 or whatever. It's just continuous runs of, like, God, I fucking hate these guys. And I mean, I guess that means they are better heels than, you know, most. I mean, Kevin Owens, probably one of the most popular guys in there. Like, people don't even boo him, and he does a hellacious, horrible shit.
Well, I think that when he does, like, I mean, when he mangled Sami Zayn, like, I mean, the crowd reactions, like, even the people who were cheering him during during promos and all that, at the moment that he put the beat down on Sami Zayn, and at the last time they fought,
well, I guess everyone reacted. I guess the comparison I'm trying to make is like. So Kevin Owens is a bad guy, and he's been presented as a bad guy pretty much since the moment he came into NXT.
A bad guy with a conscience, apparently.
And so people still love him because he's so good at what he does and everything. And
my family.
He's a Canadian man who attacks John Cena during his U.S. Championship challenge.
Yeah.
The U.S. Championship is literally a belt with the American flag on it. Kevin Owens is Canadian, and he attacks John Cena and then stomps on the United States flag, grinding it down, walks away, and, you know, there were some boos, but very, very faint.
There was a collective when he did it.
Like people were annoyed by it, but it didn't start an uproar.
And people were
Blake did that, like, he's from, what, Australia?
Mm-hmm.
So if Blake and Murphy double-teamed John Cena, and they, both those Australian dudes, like, stomped on the United States American flag, like they would be fired like Muhammad Hassan over the
riot.
Outrage and riot that people would, Blake and Murphy, to the, I'll call them to that, like... Like, there would be no stopping the hate hurricane that would happen because everybody hates every facet of them. But somehow, Kevin Owens gets away with it. And people are all like, you better beat John Cena's ass at Elimination Chamber.
But, and I think that comes from the fact that the guy that has the U.S. title is someone who has been, well, mostly hated by the hardcore fans. So, I mean, there is that.
And I think that's the hardcore fan audience, because NXT is definitely the specialized fans show. Like,
oh, yeah. Like I said, tailor-made for the hardest of hardcore.
Yeah, if you like wrestling, like TNA likes to try to say, like, this is where wrestling happens. Like, nah, son, NXT's got to but, freaking, since that's, like, the real, like, I like watching wrestling rather than, like, Raw. And they've said this, like, we want to appeal to the widest audience possible. So Raw is basically a variety show. We put comedy acts on, we put, you know, action acts on, and, you know, the matches don't run as long. I mean, look at the fact that, you know, the women's championship match went 15:33 and the average Divas championship match goes, what, 6?
Yeah,
and
also take into consideration that the highest rated segment in Raw history was a comedy promo.
Yeah, this is
like
Raw.
You can't blame them for doing what they do on Raw. Conversely, this is why NXT exists, and I'm okay with it being separate because we have an outlet now.
The only thing, I'm not defending with the muddying of, you know, true wrestling. I wish that pay-per-views were presented with the care and precision of the NXT special episodes, of it being just about the wrestling and having, you know, serious, amazingly thought-out matches. And I wish that they used... When Main Event was first launched, it was literally like main events. Like those opening shows, they had Cena versus Cesaro, Orton versus Jack Swagger, like killer matches. And that was, like, kind of their spot where they're all like, we're going to let you go on TV and tear it the hell down. Yeah. And now and main event is trash.
Yeah, and not only that. Well, because main event is now just, like, the connector to from Raw to SmackDown.
Main event is now 50% replays of Raw and SmackDown.
That, too. But another thing, and I don't know if they forgot. Like, I don't know if the person who's in charge of, like, those videos and whatever is not there anymore, but the video packages for main event were completely different from the video packages that normally accompany a main event for Raw or a WWE pay-per-view. Those packages were done in the format of like a boxing or a UFC main event, where they went through stats and, you know, like their history, like their actual history, not their wrestling story. So it was very, very different. And then the format, I think, lasted like, what, 2-3 months? And then it just died. And it became like the run-of-the-mill superstars, you know, Sunday Night Heat type of program. Which is a really damn shame now that I think about it.
Following up, we've got the Women's Championship match, the NXT Women's Championship match. And the first time of the night that they changed the hashtag intended on the top banner to Divas Takeover, it really should have been Women Takeover.
Yeah, I have a problem with them calling the women that wrestle in NXT Divas. They are not fucking divas. These are women wrestlers. Like, they're not out there parading, you know, trying to be models or, you know, win a beauty pageant. They're in no way, shape, or form are these women divas. That's not to say there's some not stunning women out there, but I really think that calling them divas takes away from what they're doing in that ring.
Well, Sasha Banks is the boss, so that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So the boss is on top, and, you know, she acts a little divish. But
she acts a little divish, but that's her character, though. Yeah. Like that, and she's a heel. So think about that for a second. Her character as a heel is being a diva. So what does that say about calling them divas? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I absolutely detest that the women's title in WWE, the main one, is called the Divas one. Like, they really need to bring back the Women's Championship. And there's a reason, There's also the fact that the NXT Women's Championship is called the NXT Women's Championship. It's not called the Divas Championship.
And like we've said before, that people explode with joy that they know that the women's title is going to be...
Yes. Defeated. Like, the reaction... When they say that there's going to be a Divas match in a regular WWE pay-per-view, most people go, oh, piss break. When that happens in NXT and we've experienced this live, like, we've seen it, and we've heard it, people erupt as if there's going to be a freaking WWE World Heavyweight Championship main event. Like, it's unreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch had 15 minutes, 33 seconds of great action.
Longest match of the night.
Longest match of the night, yeah.
I just realized.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it straight from the entrances, they gave a classic kind of boxing hype package walkout video for Becky Lynch,
mm-hmm.
which she's never had before. She's got the hoodie on. She comes out. They're shooting her from behind. She walks through the curtain.
They had the tension.
And then the light builds up. Oh, yeah, the NXT championship.
Well, that's from like 1990s WWE when they would have the world title matches, though.
Yeah,
that's from way back then. Yeah. Yeah.
But they've had it at NXT for a while, is what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so she comes out, she pulls back the hood, she's completely changed her look. She's now got this steampunk vibe, bright
orange hair.
And she's walking down the ring, new gear. It's just a variation on the most recent gear that she debuted with the Fatal 4-Way match, which was the first step to Becky Lynch kind of winning people over. this mm-hmm. one solidified that, like, people can love Becky Lynch.
Yeah, after this match, I am on the Becky Lynch train.
And this is a guy who hated
Becky But let's be real. They even acknowledged the, like, her stupid gimmick, you know, with the dancing jig and everything, which I love. I love that they basically shit all over that gimmick. They're like, listen, like, this was a mistake.
What do you want? What do you want her headbanging with the title? Like,
yeah. It was absolutely great that they acknowledged the fact that they made mistakes and they immediately rectified it. Like, that would never happen in regular WWE unless it was, like, a really horrendous gimmick that someone survived.
And the build to this match was excellent. I mean, Becky was pretty much slaughtering Sasha every week leading up to this. Attacked her, braid her down, kept putting her into that vicious armbar hold that she has. This woman works an arm incredibly well, and it turns out Sasha does too. These two went at each other, and they picked a body part, and they stuck with it the whole match. It's completely that setup and everything, like I need to do everything to injure that spot so that I can get the finish. Like this was Ronda Rousey vision. They were like, armbar.
At the expense of sounding like insane hyperbole here, the Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, the way they wrestled, it felt like I was watching a 1970s or early 1980s Ric Flair versus, like, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat fight, where they would be working, like, Ric Flair would be working the legs, Steamboat would be working, like, the torso, you know, like, the whole match.
And Sasha just generally tends to bring that feel out of her matches of a hyper-stylized but classic style of match. She starts her matches almost every single time with the lockup. When's the last time you saw a major championship match start with the lockup?
Off the top of my head, and I've been thinking about this all day since you mentioned this earlier to me before we started recording, the only match I can think of that happened was the last time The Rock and Cena fought.
Exactly.
That's the last time I remember them having the lockup.
2.5 years ago, since the last time a major match has started with the classic, two competitors circle the ring, looking in each other's eyes, arms forward, grab each other's shoulders, lockup.
Yeah.
And I
could be wrong.
For years, that's the staple of wrestling. And they got so far away from that for so long, it, seeing that, at least in a big match moment, like, that really gave me a lot of respect for the open of it.
Mm-hmm.
I also like that Sasha and Becky, they had a pace to this match. They started right. off really slow, both of them kind of arm drag, hits, really, you know, methodical pace, slow, and then at one point, Becky is in the corner, Sasha does too many kicks. Becky finally launches back, hits a kick, jumps over the top, and Sasha grabs her arm, smashes her face into the top. From there, shit was on. From that point, they just ran with it and were devastating one another.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. Like, there's no going around it. The whole match, like you said, they had a really good rhythm. You know, started really slow. Very slow, actually. Like, real methodical. A lot of... did she do a chin lock? I remember the...
There was a chin lock.
Yeah, there was chin locks. There was a lot of, you know, like you said, arm drags or arm locks.
Ton of arm locks. Everything was focused on the arm. And at a point, I mean, Becky got her big launch back, but pretty much after her face got smashed down, Sasha Banks began to go into bona fide heel mode. She wrenched her arm, smashed it down, to the point where Becky was walking around selling the injury of her arm with it just dangling limp at her side, like she was Gohan at the end of the Cell games. She had just gotten wrecked, and it's sitting there. Like, if she was a Namekian, she would have ripped that thing off so she could start fresh.
Yeah, and speaking of Dragon Ball, I mean, they had... I think they were the only two people who did that. Because I don't remember. Did Sasha Banks always have such bright purplish hair?
I think she touched it up. I mean, it seemed like her
bright orange, you know, bright purple, like their hairs signified, you know, like, hey, we're on a new level today. Like, I like that. Like, even just visually, it seemed like we were watching them perform at a different level. So for me, you know, like, that sells it.
So Becky went Super Saiyan, but Sasha just happened to be Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan.
Nah, son. Sasha Frieza, and this is purple.
But Frieza loses, dude.
No, he wins a couple of times, remember?
Not against
Becky Lynch, Saiyans. Are you... Yeah.
Against Super Saiyans?
Well, maybe Becky Lynch is a Namek in this case, since, you know, she's not the chosen one.
Nah, son, she ain't Namek. She wasn't trash.
But no, there was, again, this was like an eye-opener to what Becky Lynch can do. Because since she joined the company, I was thoroughly unimpressed. Like, I had no concept of what her history was. I had no idea that she had an actual wrestling background before NXT.
I was going down on the Becky Lynch train for a long time. I was all about Becky Lynch. I was pretty much defending her against anybody who talked wrestling against me. Like, I don't really get why Becky Lynch is here. I don't get why Becky Lynch is here. She's here because she is a female suplex machine. Like, she put Sasha Banks through Suplex City Women's Edition. Like, she must have met up with Brock Lesnar and been like, can I get some directions to how to get that? Or, and everything. And just fisherman suplex, German suplex, exploder suplex, imploder suplex, arm behind the back when she was working the arm, drop, back body drop. Everything she did to throw Sasha around the ring and put the pain, and Sasha survived and came through and put the bank statement so that she could cut the check. It was solid from both of them.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a couple, there was like at least four or five spots where I thought, okay, they're dead. Like she has killed Becky Lynch, or I think, I can't remember what move Becky Lynch did on Sasha Banks. It might have been the Exploder Suplex or another one of the many suplexes that happened.
She did the Imploder Suplex with Sasha's arm tucked behind her back, and so Sasha landed and sold that the arm took the brunt of damage.
Oh, okay, that's the one.
She immediately went into her hooked arm bar.
Yep,
and
it looked like death.
And she pulled this thing back. Like,
yeah, it looked like death. Sasha, like, I was like, she's dead.
Feeling something there, and Sasha barely gets to the rope. Like, you were feeling it. You're like, this match is over. Like, new champion. Like, I wish the boss wasn't going down, but this is happening. And then she grabbed the rope and was able to break it and get an eventual comeback. But at that point, both women are just facing each other, arms dangling at the side, and you're all like, wait a second, they're both Gohan? What? You can't have two Gohans. That's too strong.
You can't do this, man. their match, I mean, and we've been saying this about every single NXT Women's Championship match since NXT started doing these specials, like, every single time. They've either been really close to match of the night, or they have been the match of the night. This time, there was no ifs and or buts. Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch for the NXT Women's Championship was the match of the night. Dare I say, the match of the month so far.
Here's how good this match was. Sasha Banks was trending on Twitter 24 hours after NXT TakeOver Unstoppable. In the top 5 tweets, like, trending 24 hours later, still that many people care about the developmental league of pro wrestling that is one of the top 5 things that people are talking about around the world.
Yeah, let it be known that TakeOver was still trending.
John Cena wasn't trending. Yeah. Kevin Owens wasn't trending. Sasha.
Samoa Joe wasn't trending 24 hours after it.
Let me tell you something about Samoa Joe, all right? We already got Samoa Joe. His name is Roman Reigns. Joe Onaway. That's your Samoa Joe, all right? I'm excited though. Like I'm not a big Joe fan. I'm not a big Samoa Joe fan.
And I am a huge Joe Mark.
But I'm very excited for the matchups that can happen.
Oh yeah.
I need Owens versus Joe in my life, and they immediately were like, "We got you."
This might be happening. I remember when I said something like CM Punk leaving the WWE was probably like one of the better things that happened, like hindsight 2020 here.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now with Samoa Joe coming in, not only I still believe that, but I also think, man, he just screwed himself out of the opportunity of having Joe versus Punk 4 and it being on the grandest stage of them all. Because if he would have played his cards right, because Joe's already beloved. Like, most people like Joe. Joe's friend, if I'm not mistaken, him and Cena go way back. So he's going to be fine. Like, his skill alone is going to carry him anyway. But he would have been able to make that happen. And Punk just kind of screwed everyone out of this. Like, we could have had Punk, Joe versus Punk Part 4, and it's not going to happen now.
Let me tell you why 2015 is ramping up to be one of the best years in wrestling. WrestleMania 31, one of the best WrestleManias ever. We got Suplex City. We got all freaking new faces. Sting. We got all new faces in the WWE title main event picture. We got John Cena moved out of the main event title picture.
Yep. And
we got in the mid card, Sasha Banks trending on Twitter and having matches of the nights. And if all goes well, we get CM Punk permanently crippled in his UFC debut. Like,
I knew this was building to a heel turn.
2015 is great.
Fight Punk, fight. Fight Punk, fight.
Oh my god, he's so hurt. Well, the ref. Staph infection.
Oh. But yeah, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. What are your thoughts on how they did this match?
I like that Sami Zayn had the bulk of the attack. Like, he was on the offensive, and it was very parallel to the previous one. I mean, the promos building up to it were great.
Oh, yeah.
I liked the fact that Corey Graves, great commentator that he is, did the Manny Pacquiao comparison. He's going into this title match with a shoulder injury. At least he had the decency to, you know, let us all know and then fight through it.
I absolutely, before we continue, I forgot to mention how, and I think I said this before, but how great the NXT commentary is. And I don't know if it's because fresh voices, I don't know how much control Triple H has on their mics, you know, on their earpieces. I don't know how things are run, but I do know this. NXT commentators treat NXT as a sport, right? Because that's the whole gimmick. Pro wrestling, like, commentators are supposed to commentate as if this was a sport. Everything that they're watching, they're translating to us as if it was real. WWE, the main WWE universe, their commentary has been doing this for the past, like, couple of years, and it's really, really irritating me. For whatever reason, they sell certain things that they shouldn't sell, and then there's things that you're like, oh my god, this is like death, and they underplay it. Case in point. Harper versus Dean Ambrose. And I heard about this not long ago, and I forgot to mention it. When they brought out their weapons, right, the chairs and, you know, whatever else that they brought at the Chicago Street Fight, is the one I'm talking about. I think it was King that said, oh God, they're bringing out the toys. That's exactly how he says it. Any other time that someone would have brought weapons to a wrestling match, JR, for example, would have sold that like death. Oh my God, they're bringing weapons. to the match. You know, like, it would have been a completely different environment. NXT doesn't do that. They don't underplay things. Like, if someone's getting hurt, they're going to play off like someone is getting hurt, for real. Whereas the WWE, the main commentators, and I'm speaking mostly of King, JBL, and Cole. They're the ones that most of the time I tune them out completely. Because I don't think they bring anything to the table anymore. Like, I think, honestly, they're overpaid, and they should not even be with the company anymore. Because the job that they're doing is, honestly, amateurish. And they've been doing it for years. I mean, they've been doing this for... How long has Cole been part of the commentating team, or part of, like, the backstage announcing team? He's been around since, what, the mid-90s?
Cole has been with them since, I think, 98.
Yeah. So why does Cole... I mean, why do they act that way? I don't understand why the commentary is that way. And then you have people from NXT, which, again, is portrayed as being the small leagues of the WWE. Why does it feel so infinitely superior? Like, do you think there's a reason for that, or do you think it's just, again, people that are young and hungry?
Probably more like the young and hungry thing. It's too easy to hate on the commentary, but it's getting too hard to defend them.
I don't want to come off as like, oh man, like, I've always hit. Like, it's been slowly building to this point.
They do have less of a focus on it and everything, and I think it's because they're trying to sell so many things. I heard an interview with JBL, and it made me really, and this is so weird to say, made me really want Michael Cole to do one of those serious interviews, like have him do an interview with Jericho or Stone Cold or something like that.
I actually do want him to.
because in the interview, you had JBL kind of going over, we get that a lot of people don't like our commentary, but we've got to do it. We've got to have a number of mentions of our sponsors, you know, fit in, and sometimes it's awkward. We've got to have certain things run down. We have people in the truck consistently watching other programs and knowing, you know, when those things are going to commercial, we suddenly have to talk about the entire night. Like, even if a match is going on, if a major show just had, you know, an early ending of a, you know, football game or a big, you know, drop-off point and it just went to commercial, they might be flipping the channels. We want to be running down the entire match card. And that's why in the middle of Dean Ambrose versus Luke Harper, we're going, oh, can you still believe that earlier in the night we had, you know, John Cena defending his title against Kevin Owens? Wasn't that exciting? And it seems like a non sequitur, but they're doing it for a reason. And they're trying to get these things set up. And I heard that and I was like, that's pretty interesting.
And I mean, I understand. I have no problem with them going over the card in the middle of a match. It is a little distracting, but I get it. I understand that they're selling a product. At the end of the day, commentators are... They're salesmen. They're selling both the match and the product. I get that. But at the same time, I don't think that's a valid excuse to literally sometimes... Okay, maybe not literally, but shitting on a match for no good reason. Like, taking... It feels like sometimes they just take you away from the match too abruptly. Mm-hmm. Or they underplay... Again, going to that example of, like, oh, the toys. Like, really? The toys? Like weapons? If Brock Lesnar did that in the main event, do you really think they would have called them toys?
Yes.
You think they would have called them toys?
Yes.
That just makes it worse.
I think they just immediately are going to equate it to toys. And I think it's part of the PG thing is that they want to try to make it be all like, oh, these super people are using these things like toys type thing, because we've moved from the point where it used to be that the chair was the strongest thing you could hit somebody with. Like, If the chair happened, if the ladder happened, if the table happened, anything, you were done. You weren't kicking out of it. That was the finish. Like, somebody seated with the chair or used that, you were unconscious, flat out. And then the game kind of changed to where the hardcore title, I think, is primarily responsible for this.
Oh, yeah.
But the game kind of changed to where somehow a Stone Cold Stunner, an Attitude Adjustment, a Dirty Deeds does more damage. So, like, if a chair is now, like, a flat line, you know, 70 damage, those are, you know, 8500s.
Right.
And that makes no sense. Hitting somebody with a bat or a metal object should always be the worst thing you can do to that somebody, because, you know, you have your special technique and everything, and that should be devastating, and it is a finisher for the reason, but somebody's using a weapon that's not coming from their natural body. Like, that should be much more devastating.
Yeah, I think
that when they finally have the match that utilizes weapons in NXT, because they've all been pretty based, plain matches. Like, if they end, you know, in DQ, it's from, you know, a low blow or somebody walking off or anything like that, or a legal hold. But I think they're trying to rebuild that with NXT, that when somebody does use it, like, they're done from that chair.
Yeah, and I also like that in NXT, now that you mention that, gimmick matches are few and far between. So, like, when we have a ladder match, for example, you're like, oh, my God, ladder match in NXT? What?
Yeah, we haven't had, like, a ladder match in NXT since Bo Dallas versus Adrian Neville.
Exactly, and it was a fantastic match.
Yeah, great ladder match.
And it's one of those, like, wait, like, when was the last gimmick match in NXT? Like, I don't even remember anything after that. It's all been pure matches. So, I don't even want to know what happens when they bring a table match to NXT. Like, that's going to be the day where, like, the internet implodes.
It's true.
I don't know. I had to get that commentary thing out, because it was really bugging me that all night. I was like, man, like, this commentary is really good. And I was like, why don't I have that same feeling when I'm watching, say, WrestleMania? Not that the WrestleMania commentary was bad. It was actually pretty good, but...
Because every time a commentator that has that mindset moves up to the main roster, they squash him down and put him into as bad of a situation as possible so they falter. Byron Saxton got thrown out there on a Raw, probably not let know that he was going to have that happen, and they suddenly have him go out there alone. And of course he's muddying his words and unsure what's going on, because...
Yeah.
You sat up there with, like, no anticipation, and he's on the big stage. He froze the hell up.
Yeah, he froze.
and it was bad. Tom Phillips, you know, joined the SmackDown crew, got tossed off probably because, you know, he wasn't clicky enough with King or Booker. Like,
yeah. And I think the same problem happened when they had, I think, one of the better announcers that we had. Matt Stryker during the mid 2000s. I would say he was the buzz announcer.
People the wrong way. Yep.
Yeah. Rubs you the wrong way. You know what? Who the fuck cares if he rubs you the wrong way? He was great at his job. He called the matches. He actually knew the moves that were happening. And half the time they made fun of him for knowing the move, because he wouldn't say that it was like a modified DDT. He would call it what it was.
You know, an underhook DDT or anything.
Yeah, like, that really irks me that people who are commentating on a wrestling program get butthurt because someone actually knows the moves. And, you know, to them, that's being snobbish. No, that's being knowledgeable.
Exactly.
Apply yourself to your job. Yeah. Cole and King of all people,
you know,
should
you,
know
you
these things.
You want to talk about not liking the person and everything, and not squashing him down. Here's a credit I'll give to JR. JR said when they were commentary partners, he hated Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
Hated his guts. And Paul Heyman said, when I was commentary partners with JR, I would purposely try to piss him off and just do the worst things possible, to where probably at the end of the night, like, JR wanted to punch him in the face, when they weren't on camera anymore.
They were so good together.
And everything. But they were really good together because both of them were calling the match, and, you know, color commentators supposed to be annoying, supposed to be rude.
Yeah.
And everything. And, you know, play-by-play is supposed to, you know, go over things. So pulling him out of that and making him, you know, uncomfortable and then just letting him do his thing, and both of them are able to, you know, push through on these things. So it doesn't matter that you hated Stryker or that you don't like the way Saxton works, so you want to prank him on, you know, national TV, which I'm certain is what the background of that situation was.
Yeah.
So that they can, you know, just put him out there in a bad situation and then go, see, it's really hard doing what we do, so we're not as bad as you guys like to claim we are. It's like, no, you're as bad as we claim you are, and you're dicks. Like,
they come off worse in this particular scenario, especially since, and I know they're dicks, because I have seen...
Byron's like actually first, give great commentary when he's
spread. Well, not only that, but, like, I've seen, like, there's videos and audio, like, leaked audio of, like, commentary, you know, like, Cole, King, JBL, and all them, like, when they're not live, like, when they have their mics on and, you know, audio seeps through. And I've heard some shit they said, and I'm just kind of like, these guys are not nice people.
Yeah, they're saying some hateful things.
Like, they say some things that I'm like, like, you're not really making me like you anymore. But that's the hand that we're dealt. Like, that's... And I think, just like how some people complain that Cena... I think... Stone Cold actually said this once, like, Cena has been on top too long. Like, he's been overexposed. I think the commentary team, specifically Cole King, have been overwhelmingly overexposed to the audience. Like, I really think it's time to put them somewhere else. I really think their time, like, if they're still the main commentators by 2020, I don't know how well I would handle that. Like, that's 20 years of King and Cole. I can't do it. Can't.
I don't think they will all be by 2020, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, you know, within a year we should see a little bit more fluctuations and people retire and stuff. Because, I mean, really, does King need to be out there, you know, every single week, even though he's been reduced to SmackDown, so that it's a little less of, you know, a hectic on him?
Yeah.
He shouldn't be out there at all. Like, let him, you know, relax. He's a legend. Let him enjoy his glory days and just host special events. Like,
yeah.
Because he's great on the Hall of Fames. Great.
Yeah, well, because he's not playing... I don't even know, like, what he's playing. You know, like, I remember in the 90s he was, you know, puppies and all that good stuff. I don't even understand what he does now. Like, I don't get him. I don't understand what his gimmick is. Like, is he the middleman? Is he the color commentator? I know for damn sure he's not the play-by-play, so... I don't know. That being said, I like the Kevin Owens Zayn match. And sorry, you know, this all came from the Corey Graves commentary, which, by the way, great wrestler. Too bad his career got cut short. But, man, he has a future in commentary. If the main people pull their heads out of their asses and put him in the main desk.
I really hope that the bit of pulling Alex Riley off of the commentary desk at NXT and having him return to, like, an active wrestling role, now that his, you know, storyline with Kevin Owens is over... I really hope that it means that he's going to appear as a commentary person on SmackDown or Raw, because he's good enough to move up to those. Either that or he's going away, because he just isn't going to be a wrestling star. It's just not his deal.
Right, yeah, it's not going to happen. But at the same time, he should still stick with the company, you know?
Yeah, like, he's too good on commentary. He's a great guy. So him moving up will give Corey Graves more of an opportunity to go that. They need to go back to having Renee Young do more play-by-play. I don't give a shit about the kickoff at all. Like, you know what? That's what you do for your kickoff.
Mm.
You lighten the load of Cole, JBL, Booker, and King. You move them to the kickoff crew. You pull the young kids for commentary up to the main desk.
Like, so you switch it.
You make that transition and everything, because that you can have, you know, a base group that knows, you know, what they're doing and everything, and they can just run down the kickoff and everything. But they're having Renee host the fucking View before every major event kickoff, and it comes off lame as shit. Because that's lame as shit. Have her do what she does great. She does amazing play-by-play.
She does.
She needs to be on that desk behind the mic shooting the show.
Yeah, she needs to be part of the main commentary. And I know they cycle them. I mean, they do cycle the NXT commentary. Because I think they're trying to figure out who has the best...
Who was that new guy that was on the show today, actually, since we're talking about the commentary?
The short dude. I have no idea who that guy is, and I do not like him.
He said a few things, and I don't agree with any of that.
He is the Mike Adam Lee of NXT, all
right? Right?
He is absolutely worthless. I don't know where they found him. I don't know who decided that was a good on-air personality. Get him off my TV. And you know what? I'm paying $9.99 now to see this, so I feel like I have a little more voice to it. Get him off my TV.
I'm paying
like,
for this?
Like, my sub is in danger because of it.
You're just turning into that guy. You're all
thinking, yeah. Like, I bought your house.
The CM Punk thing?
Yes.
I bought your house? God damn it. Oh, shoot.
Yeah. But yeah,
Rich Brennan, that was his name.
Rich fucking worthless as well.
Trash.
Yeah. This is my heel turn for the night.
So, Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. What do you think of the finish? Cuz I thought it was a bit of a muddy finish cuz Kevin Owens kind of walks off. But Sammy was in horrible shape.
So like, basically,
Joe didn't even really make the save.
No, it was ruled a no contest. Like if you look for like match end, what everything says, you know, match never had an official ending. It's just that Owens had to left the ring after all the referees came out, and they declared it a no. I don't think they actually declared it a no contest. There was no ringing of the bell. No formal announcement on the actual broadcast.
So that's my only mark of weakness on this, was that he's attacking Sami Zayn brutally.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were presented last time that they had this fight was Kevin Owens is brutalizing Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where the doctors told the ref, this has got to stop. And, you know, by unable to continue knockout, Kevin Owens is the new champion. And right. I thought they were just going to do it again and just solidify that Sammy wasn't ready type thing.
Right.
But instead, William Regal ran out and actually put his hands on Kevin Owens trying to
start
the fight. I didn't understand why. Like,
I think
that he doesn't like that Kevin Owens is being evil. And then Kevin, you know, put his hands on the boss, which, wow, like, that was a big moment.
I think what it is going back to what I was saying earlier, how NXT is trying more and more to be a realistic environment in some ways. So if, like, your boss happens to be a wrestler, of course he's going to put his hands on you. And the way it ended, because of, you know, the brutal beatdown.
I would hope that that's not an of course.
Yeah. But the way, I mean, this is brutal beatdown 2.0. Like, I mean, he just beat the snot out of him.
And, I mean, Sammy had a great, you know, thunder at the beginning, because he mm-hmm. went out and, you know, blue thunder bomb.
No, yeah.
Diving DDT, like, everything.
Yeah, like you said, he was on offense. He was trying to make up for the last time he fought him, you know.
But Kevin Owens is Majin Buu, man.
Yeah, Majin.
The damage does not stay.
That does not stay. So he's leaving the ring, and then he comes back, right? Like, he leaves the ring, comes back to attempt to beat him down again. People were calling for, who were they chanting? I don't remember. Were they chanting for
Uha Nation, baby?
Yeah, Uha Nation, because Uha Nation got the pop of the night when they announced the class of 2015 NXT, alumni. or whatever they're calling it, the freshman NXT sign-ins, and there was like five people. I've seen like one of them before, but man, when UHA Nation appeared on the screen, you would have thought that Stone Cold appeared. Like, that was a big pop for a guy that's not even, for all intents and purposes, has never appeared in the show before. You know, so he comes with that pre-indie hype, and they're chanting for him. You know, they're saying like UHA, you know, save him, this and that. And suddenly, this music hits that's kind of tribal. No one knows what's happening because never heard the music before. And out comes Samoa fucking Joe.
Joe's gonna kill you.
Yeah, Joe, fight Owens, fight. Joe is going to kill you. Like, and they had, well, at first, Owens actually did the, you know, the coward heel thing. And, you know, he left. He's like, nope. I want nothing to do with this. And then they got up close and personal.
You know, I think Owens actually looks more intimidating because he's got that face that doesn't give a shit.
I think it's the, yeah, it's the, his demeanor. His demeanor, and I mean, as a heel also, like, and we haven't seen, I mean, for all intents and purposes, we don't know what Joe's capable of within this environment, in this universe, if you will. We know what he can do in his alternate TNA universe and in ROH.
So I won't say Marvel versus DC because of the fact that, you know, those are two equal companies.
Right.
So this
multiverse.
Is like,
this is a multiverse.
So this is like DC versus like I don't know, Image Comics. Nah, that's in food.
No. It's 616.
This is DC versus Archie. Right?
This is like, no. This is 616 versus like some alternate universe from Marvel that no one gives a shit about. Not 2099, like not that one or Ultimate.
It is the Ultimate Universe because in the Ultimate,
you think so? Universe,
the only thing anybody gives a shit about is that they've got Miles Morales and like
true.
Secret Wars is only happening so that they can go like, we're gonna get rid of this whole thing, but we're gonna get Miles Morales into the 616. So
Samoa Joe is Miles Morales?
So Samoa Joe is Miles Morales that they
confirmed.
Pulled. Saved him from the dying universe of TNA, and they brought him to 616 so that he could rise up.
I love that. Oh, I love that. That's great.
That's exactly what it
was. I am down for NXT Secret Wars. Like, you just sold it on me.
That's what it is. That's all it is. Man. And then, great match, great face-off, great show. Last thing before we finish up today, I kind of want to go over with. So you spoke about UHA Nation and the fact that we've seen the 2015 induction group of the new crop that's going to be training at NXT through the NXT training grounds.
Yes.
Here's my question.
Okay.
Why isn't that tough enough?
Okay.
Because
I think, hold on. I know, but tough enough is for non-wrestlers. NXT. I honestly believe.
So many tough enoughs have had their contestants come in as, you know, indie wrestlers.
Like, I know. And I know it's happened. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to see UHA Nation doing a tough enough competition. Like, that's just like I didn't like seeing Dan O'Brien do the NXT competition back when it was like a stupid game show with them twirling their head on a bat. You know, I don't want to see that. I have no interest in that. Now, if Joe Schmo from Minnesota, right, sent a video, WWE likes him, and he makes it to the preliminaries, whatever, gets too tough enough and gets hazed by a Stone Cold, Jericho, and all of them, they, whatever, right? Let them earn their keep that way. Like, let them earn their way from the bottom. The people who, like UHA Nation and all these indie wrestlers, they don't need to earn shit as far as, like, you know, from that perspective. They've already earned it. Just like Kevin, what was that thing Kevin Owens told Cena on Monday Night Raw? When he
called him a kid and a rookie.
Yeah, a rookie?
I'm not a rookie. I've got more wrestling experience than you. I just haven't come to WWE.
Exactly. Just because they're not WWE superstars doesn't mean they're rookies, like, which is why I hated that whole rookie thing. Because these people are well fucking traveled. And, like, I feel like calling them rookies is like a giant slap to the face. And I get it, you know, they have to, like, haze them a little bit. I understand that. They have to go through some stupid gimmicks. And I'm hoping NXT is kind of like that bridge from independence to WWE so that they can sort of, like, ease them into the system without having to do a stupid gimmick, with a few notable exceptions like Adam Rose. But I really want Tough Enough and NXT to be completely different avenues of reaching the WWE.
ESPN did a recent documentary series that followed,
which was great.
Xavier Woods, Adam Rose, like their behind the scenes life and kind of like their training and their build up. That shit was fascinating.
Yeah.
Positively fascinating.
Yeah, I need more of that in my life.
More of that. So if that were to be what they had as the new Tough Enough, it would be
much better. If that's what it was. But you and I both know that that's not what Tough Enough is.
It's what Tough Enough could be. Because the Tough Enough we got had the winner get fired without ever appearing on a WWE program.
Yeah.
Like, terrible. To wrestle the match. Like, terrible. Yeah. So that's my complaint against it. Ultimately, NXT TakeOver Unstoppable was a fantastic show. Sasha Banks rose to a much higher level. Kevin Owens has solidified as a bruiser. He's going to beat John Cena at Elimination Chamber, and he's going to come back, and he's going to get wrecked by Samoa Joe. That's the way it goes.
They confirmed that their match is not for the U.S. title, right?
Non-title, which means Owens...
So Owens has to win.
Unquestionably.
Yeah. Like, that's the only reason why that would even exist, that caveat. So Owens is going to beat Cena the first match, whereas Rusev couldn't beat him for 3 pay-per-views in a row?
Well, Rusev beat him with shenanigans at Fastlane.
I know. At Fastlane, but the last two or three. WrestleMania.
Three.
Yeah,
three. Straight.
At 3 straight. So they're saying Kevin Owens.
They like, won better than Rusev.
Like, beyond better than... Wow.
Well, to be fair,
I'm agreeing.
He is better than Rusev.
Oh, yeah, like, miles.
He fights for a price. He's a prize fighter. Yeah.
Does it for his family.
Does it for his kids, man.
Oh, that's great, but yeah. Good show. Good show.
Excellent.
Amazing show.
Next episode, we're going to be discussing the Secret Wars event coming up for Marvel Comics and some of the comics surrounding that special event. And the week after that, we'll actually be giving our review of the Elimination Chamber show.
Oh, that's right.
Up until then, I'm Cyan of Flame. You can find us on Twitter.
And I'm Strahd Regan.
Thank you so much. Yeah, have a good night.